Dennis, and I am the senior multi-faith educator at Global Spiritual Life at NYU, and this is Multifaithful, the podcast about religious diversity, multi-faith dialogue, and effing the ineffable. In this week's podcast, we are joined by a very, very special guest, Chelsea Clinton, someone who has long been involved in the interfaith work at NYU. She gives us some unique perspective as to how we got here and where the interfaith movement is going, and some words of inspiration for people around the country who want to start their own interfaith clubs. Thank you for listening to Multifaithful, and now to this week's conversation. So I am joined today by one of the founders of the Of Many Institute at NYU and current chair of our advisory board, Chelsea Clinton. Chelsea, thank you so much for being with
thank
us.
You. I'm so happy to be here.
And I'm joined by one of our amazing student leaders, as well as one of the student workers in our office, Sanjita. You want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Sanjita. I'm a senior at NYU studying anthropology, and I'm pretty involved in the interfaith world on campus, so I'm excited to be here.
Great. Thank you. So Chelsea, to start, I wanted to relay, I remember the first time that I met you was probably 5 or 6 years ago when I was a student at NYU getting started on this interfaith work.
It makes me feel very old, I think
I know.
It was 5 years ago. That sounds about right.
Yeah, and I remember being totally struck because we were filling out this grant application that had no money attached to it, and you went back and forth editing this grant with us for months, like throughout the summer, and helping us kind of organize our next year of programming. And I remember as students, we were completely blown away that you were spending this much time on it, and then that has evolved into the Of Many Institute and all of the amazing things. You helped with the film about Rabbi Sarnon Imam Latif. And as someone who, through the foundation and through a lot of other avenues, has the ability to work in so many different areas, I'm curious, why is this interfaith stuff important? Like, what about it is interesting to you?
Well, before I answer your question, I do want to say, Errol, that clearly your and Chelsea's passion was so evident, and I thought deserve time and energy and support, that had you been working on something in microbiology, so, you know, an area that I know nothing about and have no kind of immediate personal or intellectual connection to, I would have felt as enthusiastic about helping you throughout that grant writing process, because I was just so impressed by your shared commitment and your kind of deep and profound willingness to learn whatever you needed to learn to be able to manifest that commitment. To answer your question, I think there's sort of three stories that kind of spool together that are impossible to disaggregate from one another. The first is that I know I, like you, like Sanjita, like so many, you know, just was immediately affected and impacted by both Khalid and Yehuda, individually and even more collectively. And yeah. I just felt this deep sense of kind of recognition of not only sort of shared value, but shared purpose, mm-hmm. to role model the world that we want to live in today, and certainly want our children to grow up in. And this was even before, I guess, Rabbi Sarna had as many children as
yeah.
before.
It's hard to remember before Holland
and I
children.
had any children. And so that is also just an amazing kind of way to think of how long we've been on this journey together. Mm-hmm. The second was that I realized that not only did I respect them as faith leaders and as multi-faith leaders, even though I don't think they quite understood how significant what they were doing at NYU was, both for the community at NYU and possibly kind of with broader reverberations, mm-hmm. into our city here in New York and nationally and even kind of globally, and was I also just realized that I really wanted to be their friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I didn't want to only work with them, that I wanted to be friends with them, and that I thought we could have a lot of fun working together, and that kind of developing an authentic, organic friendship would help advance our work, and that kind of selfishly our work would give us the chance to advance our friendship. And then finally, I live an interfaith life. I very much identify and kind of feel myself to be a Methodist, to be a Christian. My husband kind of feels equally himself and identifies himself as Jewish. And we have long believed that that gives us more in common, than if one of us had a deep faith tradition and adherence and the other didn't feel like faith was important to her or to him. And that has long been part of our relationship, sort of sharing our tradition, sharing kind of the meanings and the values of those traditions as part of deepening our relationship to one another. And around the time that I first started to get to know and work with Haladin Yehuda, Mark and I were planning our wedding, and so kind of how we would weave that all together in a more formalized sense was very much top of mind. And so now, fast forwarding almost 6 years, I'm just so grateful for having Haladin Yehuda in my life, for kind of so humbled by them welcoming first me and then Mark and now our daughter Charlotte into their lives, and to the work that we continue to build and cultivate at NYU and more broadly.
So they're like your interfaith chaplain couple for your interfaith.
Yes, and I'm sure that I'm not the only person that feels that way.
Not at all. Not at all.
First, I just want to say thank you for, you know, like working so hard on creating like a club or like helping establish a club like Bridges.
Well, I deserve no credit for establishing it. I might deserve some credit for helping to expand it and kind of give it both permission and I would argue even faith to kind of look beyond what it was doing already. But definitely, I deserve no credit for establishing it. That all of that roots back to the students that were involved at the time.
Of course, but nonetheless, I appreciate all the time and all the effort that you, you know, put in. Because I know you're busy. And I think for me, one of the most transformative experiences in college was my interfaith experience, especially on Bridges. And so I can't really imagine my life after college not having that interfaith aspect. And so as a senior, I'm graduating soon, and one of the biggest fears or like one of the biggest concerns that I have is that after I graduate, I won't be able to find a setting like the Global Spiritual Life Center at NYU or Bridges at NYU. And I sort of like, I'm just asking what can I do to further this interfaith experience that I have here? How can I take the tools that I've learned here, apply to the real world?
Well, I think one, kind of one kind of phenomenon or even reality that should give you some comfort is that you're not the only student to have had these concerns, and thankfully now there are examples of alumni and alumna who have either found or built communities resembling and inspired by kind of the community that they were part of at NYU. And I think it depends, you know, in total candor, Sanjita, where you wind up. It will be easier in some places than others, not only kind of demographically, but whether or not you wind up in cities or communities where kind of many, you know, alums may already be. And so you sort of know in an obvious sense that you will have kind of fellow travelers. But I would also say that, you know, I think our success will be measured by whether or not we can continue to expand the of many circle, not only at NYU, but to other colleges and university campuses, and into communities more inclusive than just whomever happens to be studying anthropology or kind of studying, you know, alongside you or walking and passing by you in Washington Square. So I think you know more about how to create and cultivate the type of community that you want to be part of than you're probably even aware of. And I think that we are all limited by what we don't know. And I think so often people don't do things or don't make choices, not because of lack of intention, so much as a lack of imagination. So I would also urge you to help other people that you may meet in your life overcome that lack of imagination about any of the identities that you proudly claim or about any of the kind of possible relationships that you know are conceivable. And candidly, I would argue should be real kind of amazing possibilities, particularly in the United States of America in the 21st century.
So in talking about the United States, last night we had an event at NYU. So this will be a couple of days from before this airs. But for the Muslim students on campus, a rally talking about some Islamophobic experiences that students have had in the past couple of weeks and the general tone. And so I know that I, in the last week, have had at least 5 or 6 students walk into my office who are writing final papers for media classes or something, wanting to talk about Islamophobia and kind of the struggles of our Muslim students. So I'm wondering, as this becomes more and more of a topic, especially in our political discourse, do you have any guidance for those of us who are working in it, who maybe aren't Muslim, of how do we do this right? How do we do this the best way possible?
Well, I have a few thoughts. I mean, I would say one, I think it's really good that students feel comfortable already coming into your office and sharing their concerns, whether they're Muslims or whether they're worried about their Muslim friends, or even if they don't even have a Muslim friend, whether mm-hmm. they're just worried about kind of how the current tenor and temperature and kind of vitriol might be affecting just the people that they know in their dorm or in their mm-hmm. classes. I also think it's really important, from an administrative standpoint, that you and of many, but candidly, NYU more broadly in any college and university setting, continues to create kind of sanctioned spaces for people to talk about what's worrying them without concern or fear, certainly of any backlash or mm-hmm. negative response. I also think it's important to continue to be affirmative while also being clear about what is never acceptable mm-hmm. And what is the difference between free speech and hate speech. And I think free speech is hugely important, and that's a separate conversation, but is also kind of currently contested mm-hmm. and I would argue misunderstood. However, that does not ever justify hate speech, which is purely intended to express and incite hatred. And too often that is easily kind of translated or even manipulated into real violence. And that's in none of our interests. So I think from an administrative role, which it inevitably has some authority, have one kind of type of both kind of responsibility but also opportunity. And then I think more broadly, student leaders like Sanjita also have a different type of responsibility, but I would also argue equally an opportunity to help to not only provide support to Muslim students, but candidly also to force is probably too strong a word, but continue to raise these issues so that kind of no one has the ability to be apathetic mm-hmm. or disengaged. Because if something is really happening on your campus that is making, any student, but certainly a group of students who are identifiable by some kind of obvious characteristic, whether they're women or Muslims or members of the LGBTQ community, that is not only kind of individually abhorrent, but it's communally abhorrent.
Yeah.
And so I think there's both a real responsibility for student leaders who also then have some kind of position mm-hmm. of authority and platform, but also opportunity to talk about what kind of community students want to be a part of at NYU today, and also for the future. So I think they're slightly different, whether you're in an administrative position mm-hmm. or a student position, but I think they're equally important.
Yeah, I think last night was sort of one of the biggest examples one of the biggest examples of empathy that I saw throughout the university. And I think a lot of it has resulted in, is a result of probably the interfaith work that happens at NYU. I saw a lot of my Jewish, Christian, just friends from all different walks of life, all different faiths, just coming together, sitting in the Kimmel staircase and showing their solidarity and speaking out against Islamophobia. That to me was a huge marker of success in terms of interfaith work. And just the fact that, like, they were able to empathize with what people are feeling, the sentiments that we have, was very powerful indeed. But
and
I guess,
Gina, do you think there's more that should be happening?
Right, so I guess my next question sort of is like a follow-up to that. It's how do I mark my success, or how do you mark the success of any interfaith work? Like, what more can you do? I mean, for me, it's like, it's the little things that count. For example, I talk about my friendship with Avi a lot. Mm-hmm. Avi is one of my best friends at NYU. He's a senior as well, but freshman year, we were in a freshman cohort, so it was basically a group of 20 freshmen, and the freshman class gets split up, and you get assigned into cohorts, and Avi was in that cohort, and I was in that cohort, and I'm very visibly Muslim. He's also very visibly Jewish, super tall, wears a yarmulke. And there was just this, like, we were sort of, like, conditioned to know that we shouldn't talk to each other, almost. Like, it was just weird. I remember, like, I never talked to him. We'd sometimes make eye contact, but we just never, like, converse. And I remember that we sort of discovered Bridges by accident, and we realized that, oh, I guess interfaith work or Muslim-Jewish dialogue is sort of on our radars, and that pretty much opened the doors for us to get to know each other. And that sort of, for me, is one of the biggest markers of success. And we actually had our three-year friendiversary.
They posted, they taped a picture.
Friendiversary. I love that idea.
They taped a picture to my door.
Yeah, of us.
It was very cute.
It's because, you know, Facebook has, like, what happened on this day?
Yes.
I'm not sure. Yeah. So that popped up, and I'm like, oh, I guess we became friends on Facebook that day. So that is sort of a marker of success for me.
Is a tremendous marker of success. I mean, not only for interfaith work, but for life. And maybe this is just because I'm effectively a generation older than you. And that when I think about my life, I think about my family first as giving meaning and texture, and my friends, you know, who many of whom have now been in my life, and I've been able to share my life, and I've been able to share their lives for, you know, 15, 20, 30 plus years, as well as my work. So I think that for you, you know, those personal markers are hugely important, and I would hope would be part of how you think about the metrics of success in your own life. And I think for the interfaith work, I think as in any kind of meaningful and almost kind of limitless field of engagement, there are both kind of what might seem to be small, but I would argue are really profound moments, and those probably are more interpersonal. And then there are kind of the bigger macro shifts when you kind of, I hope here in a few years, that kind of whomever the equivalent of you and Avi are, you wouldn't have those same kind of preconceived notions. Mm-hmm. Maybe not on the first day, but maybe by the end of the first week or first month, right? So
hopefully
that they would erode more quickly.
Right.
So I think I would urge you, and I would hope for you as a person as well as an advocate, that you'll be able to kind of hold both of those in your heart and your head, the kind of more personal and sometimes maybe perceived to be small, but I'd argue still really important, as well as the larger shifts. And I think how you mark the larger shifts and what role you play depends on kind of how you choose to engage, and whether you choose to stay involved at NYU once you've graduated.
I'd love to.
But then I think that's a great area for you to explore, or, you know, if you choose to stay here in New York City, how you can not only support NYU, but kind of, in the best sense, leverage the NYU work into other communities, professional settings that you might be a part of. And if you go somewhere else, how you think about, to our earlier conversation, kind of building interfaith relationships, but also changing and shaping in a more affirmative, inclusive, respectful sense, kind of norms and viewpoints, but also then the possibility of the empathy that you talked so powerfully about earlier, something that affected you so strongly from last night.
I think I just also wanted to add on that sometimes interfaith, or like the interfaith world, gets scrutinized, and it's like, oh, what's the point, you know? And I think last night it sort of solidified my dedication or my investment in interfaith work and why that is so powerful. And I remember after the rally that we had, and I spoke to Ariel about this right before this, I remember last night, right after the rally, we had a town hall. So Khalid led a gathering of just not only Muslims, just like people at NYU, faculty, staff, students. And we just all sat in a room in a circle and just like sort of shared our thoughts and our experiences. And I also like shared some, you know, experiences with Islamophobia, and my peers did the same. And I was there with my friend Emma, who is also on the Bridges board with me. And I remember towards the end of the town hall, I saw that she got up to leave. And so I just said bye to her. And I was sitting with a couple of my friends, and I decided to just follow after her. So I left the room, and I saw her just sitting on the ground crying. And I was just, like, really confused, and I was just like, Emma, like, is everything okay? Like, did someone say something? Like, you know, I was just very worried about her, and I told her to just come with me to the Global Spiritual Life office. And so we sat in the office. I let her sort of, you know, let her emotions out. And then afterwards, when she was finally able to speak, she told me that what she was hearing from all of her Muslim friends was so reminiscent of what her grandparents told her about the Holocaust. And that sort of struck a major chord with me. It was the biggest show of empathy that I've ever seen in an interfaith setting. And that's when I knew that, you know, interfaith work is so, so crucial for person-to-person relationships, but also just to build empathy and just to have progress in society, hopefully.
Well, Sanjita, either unfortunately or maybe just as a recognition that kind of the circle of empathy is just so much larger. I can assure you that Emma was not the only person who felt that way. Kind of when the current rhetoric first emerged, much less even when it became so much more sharp-edged and I would argue un-American. I think for me, one of the reasons that interfaith work is important, beyond the fact that I, in full candor, and I think it's always important to own our kind of biases, have a clear vested interest because my daughter, and God willing, any other children that Mark and I might be blessed with, will grow up kind of navigating, by definition, an interfaith identity. I want that to be an asset for her. Mm-hmm. I want that to give her an even greater sense of kind of the amazing ways in which we are similar and also distinct, and the beauty contained in the kaleidoscope that is our country at its best, that is our world at its best. I also, though, strongly believe that interfaith work, and particularly multi-faith work, kind of working alongside each other in a sustained way, even just laughing alongside each other, sharing lives with people who come from different faith traditions than our own, helps us transition from tolerance to respect. And I think that's hugely important, because I think tolerance is not sufficiently robust to always guard against what we're experiencing right now at a national level. And I have long believed, admittedly, that you don't tolerate another person. Right? You tolerate when you get a cold, and it sucks, and you're miserable, and you're like, oh, I have a cold, and I have to like go to class, or I have to go to work, or, you know, just, oh, I hate my cold. But you tolerate a cold. Like it's pouring rain, right? Like I stepped in a massive puddle today, and I walked around for part of the day with like my left foot dry, my right foot wet. Right? I was like, oh, well, that's kind of funny.
Tolerate the 65-degree Christmas, right? That's about to come.
I'm going
to
tolerate the 65-degree Christmas. You don't tolerate another person, right? You respect another person. And you respect another person's traditions and faith and kind of shared humanity until you're given a clear, unimpeachable reason not to. And so I think what's so important about the work, Sanjita, that you're doing and the life that you're building at NYU and no doubt beyond NYU is that not only clearly for yourself and your friends, but as role models, I think you help people understand that on an instinctive level. Even if you never have the chance to have the type of conversation that you and I are having today, or that clearly you and Avi now have been having for years. That makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you.
So I feel like, since you and I were talking about this on the way here, but NYU is in a lot of ways unique by both being in New York, but also the amount of institutional support we have for religious life and for our Muslim community or Jewish community is just exceptionally high and allows our students so many other experiences. So for people who, maybe listeners who we have who are the one Muslim student at their university in Kansas or the one Jewish student somewhere where they would love to open an interfaith conversation and start talking about these things, and but they have no support. They don't have anyone else to do it with. So do you have any words of guidance or support, or how do we open that originally? Because even as someone who was really involved at the beginning of starting a club, I don't know if I have such a good answer to that. I feel like it just kind of happened. And I, reflecting back, I don't necessarily have
great... Yeah, we're really lucky to be at NYU, to be honest.
And so I'm curious, like, how does someone else start that?
I think, I have a few thoughts. I think oftentimes institutions and people similarly, as we were discussing earlier, don't do things out of having made a conscious choice to not do things. It's just not something that they've imagined doing before. And I think it is an incumbent on those of us, particularly who want to see change, to help make that change more imaginable, to try to close the imagination gap. And that's why I think Haladin Yehud is, just limitless generosity and being willing to talk to chaplains at other institutions, but also students, is so important. And why I think it's so important, candidly, also that we've really institutionalized and built an organization around of many, so that that can somewhat be kind of systematized, but also so that Arnold, you or even Sanjita can be a resource to students elsewhere. So I would say to any students listening who might want to start a similar effort or to create kind of similar shared spaces on their campus, to reach out to you and ask kind of what, even at a bare minimum, might help make a big difference. And I would hope really that you would have Christian students listening too, who would raise their hands and say, I don't know any Muslim students here at my school. I still want every Muslim student to feel comfortable and confident that we are part of this shared community. And so what do I need to do to be part of creating that? Because I don't want anyone to feel like they have to reinvent the wheel. Yeah. But I do want people to feel really well-equipped when they go and ask their university for whether it's space or just recognition or kind of whatever resources they might need, that they're able to make such a strong affirmative case why it's not only something that they care about, and I do think universities and colleges should be responsive to their students, so I think that is an important reason, but also that it's really in the best interest of the university and college today and into the future.
Well, I could continue talking about this all day, but I know that we are running out of time, so I just wanted to say for myself, and also I know for Haladin Yehud, because I was with them yesterday at a staff meeting, thank you so much for your time and for doing the interview with us and for all of the hard work and help you've done for helping set us up at NYU
and
for
our
continued success.
I'm really reaping from the benefits of that.
Girl, thank you so much for bringing us. I'm so grateful that I got to meet her today, and I just
I'm even more grateful
so,
to
I'm so proud of all that we've built, but I also know we still have so much work ahead, so please continue to call on me and let me know what I can do to be helpful, and I just am so grateful to have the opportunity to have talked with you both today, and wish you the best for the coming new year.
Thank you. So, to you as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. you for listening to another episode of Multifaithful. We'd especially like to thank our guest, Chelsea Clinton, for dedicating so much time to us and for being willing to do this interview. Also like to thank Sanjita for making this interview so much fun and for the awesome subway ride we had to and from the interview together and for being just one of the most incredible student leaders we have here at NYU. Thank you, as always, to Brian Young for editing and producing the podcast. Brian is actually not in our office anymore. He is doing his semester abroad in Ghana. So we wish Brian a wonderful semester abroad. Thankfully, he's going to still be doing some editing and producing abroad for us, so we don't lose him completely, but it will be sad not to have him around the office. Especially thank you Liz Swatos for her music that was originally from the Of Many film. If you liked this week's podcast and have thoughts or suggestions, please let us know at spiritual.life@nyu.edu. Also, please rate and review us on iTunes. Very helpful for getting us new listeners. Thank you again for listening, and we look forward to having you listen to future episodes.